বিদ্রোহীর অনক্লান্ত আমি সেই দিন হব শান্ত, যবে উৎপীড়িতের ক্রন্দন রোল আকাশে বাতাসে ধ্বনিবে না, অত্যাচারীর খর্গ কৃপাণ ভীম রণভূমি দণিবে না। আমি চির বিদ্রোহী বীর, আমি বিশ্ব ছাড়ায় উঠিয়াছি একা চির উন্নত শীল।
Hi, this is Joseph Al-Malah. This is a special program on the rising tension between the U.S. and Iraq. My guests, Mr. Luis Al-Azariya, he's a former, or I should say a retired academic, and Mr. Mark Azar, both of them are the specialists on the Iraqi issue. But I want to read a quote, if I may, and we will start from there. The former U.N. weapons inspector in Iraq, Scott Ritter, said in a speech in Boston last week, and I quote, "The clock is ticking, and it is ticking toward war, and it is going to be a real war. It is going to be a war that will result in the death of hundreds, if not thousands, of Americans and tens of thousands of Iraqi civilians. It is a war that is going to devastate Iraq. It is a war that is going to destroy the credibility of the United States." The end of quote. And watching the Iraqi television here from Montreal through the satellite and the Arabic television, I can say that everybody in the Middle East or in the Arab countries are taking this call for war seriously. And I would like to ask my guest, how serious is this call for war? Everybody expecting this war within 2 months. How close we are to this, Dr. Azri?
Well, I think the U.S. is likes, if I may use the word, they like war, and I think that shouldn't be taken lightly. This, and that's it. And I think that it's unpredictable what U.S. policy, which way they'd go. So I think that should be taken very seriously.
Frankly, I think the danger is real. I think it's imminent. Troops have already been moved. Bases have been set up in Qatar, in the region. There are right now hearings of the Senate committees, foreign affairs in the U.S. About what to do, which is, as I said before, already pro-war. But there are things that the indications that this is serious. This is not just a threat to have Iraq more try to play on Iraq fears. It's real, and it's expected to happen when we don't really know. Some expect in autumn. Others are talking now more and more about elections of mid-elections of I can't remember what, and not before probably this winter, and the temperature in Iraq will be more favorable for this and stuff like that. But it's definitely a real threat. It's not anymore a question of if, but when, rather, I would say.
Well, thanks, Mark. I would like also to invite to the discussion from Vancouver, Linda Morgan, who is an activist with the Network to End Sanctions on Iraq, and who led a campaign across Canada to make people aware of the consequences of the sanction against Iraq. Welcome to the program, Linda.
Thank you.
What do you think? Is the war imminent? Is it serious talk about war on Iraq?
Well, Scott Ritter has also said that troops have been deployed around the Middle East, and he's talking about October. But yesterday I was listening to the Senate hearings, and they are saying sort of won't be until after the elections in November. So they're now saying January. But today, I received notice that Iraq has said that it's willing to let the weapons inspectors back in.
Well, this
so I think that perhaps has sort of thrown a little spider in the ointment, so to speak, and now they're going to have to rethink it. But, you know, the whole thing is not really about weapons of mass destruction. It's about control of the oil. And I've also heard Colin Powell say that if they didn't have Saddam Hussein there, you know, because they're talking about a regime change, they would have to invent one, a Saddam Hussein. They'd have to have something because, you know, they want control of the oil.
But it seems that the United States is standing behind that, the question of U.S. or U.N. inspectors.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, they want the U.S. U.N. inspectors to come back to or to go to Iraq with no unconditional return. And the Iraqi regime are saying that these inspectors, we asked them to leave about 11 years ago because they were spies to the U.S. and Israel, and they have a whole file on that business. Although I agree with you, today they ask that Mr. Hans Blix is the U.N. inspector to come to Baghdad to discuss the details of the return of his team.
Mm-hmm.
But how serious is this issue of the inspectors, of the U.N. inspectors, Dr. Lewis?
I think I'd rather just pass this on
to
Mark.
Mark,
yes.
Okay, what do you think, Mark?
I think, as you mentioned in your premise, first, it's 3 years ago that they were they left the country after the start of the bombings in December 1999. The inspectors from AdWord, Mr. Butler, was the chief inspector in charge, AdWord from the U.S., that we were starting the bombing, and they decided to leave the country so they weren't kicked out of Iraq. The question, you mentioned it yourself, it's not about weapons of mass destruction in Iraq and in Vancouver.
Linda.
Linda also mentioned it. It's about the oil interest for the U.S. to get to the Iraqi oil. The country has been inspected by Scott Ritter himself said and it's been documented that the country has been inspected through in and out with surprise inspections, thorough inspections for the last 8 years before 1999. For straight 8 years straight. So it's, and Scott Ritter is on record as saying that to him Iraq has been quantitatively disarmed. It doesn't pose a threat. There are no countries in the region that say that Iraq posed a threat to them. The question actually is about the interest for oil, but it's also the question that we started before your arrival, Joseph, and that Louis mentioned. It's the impact of when everybody speaks about weapons of mass destruction. The biggest weapon of mass destruction right now is on the Iraqi people themselves, and it has been the sanctions imposed by Canada and the sanctions imposed by the UN. These are the most scary weapons of mass destruction in my mind, and according to all specialists that have been working on UNSCOM, such as Scott Ritter, the issue right now and even Iraq's gesture will be proven probably absolutely of no interest to the U.S. right now. They're saying they want a regime change now. They don't care about weapons of mass destruction. They say they cannot trust a new team. They'll be and it's infinite because there is never a goal set for these so-called inspections, even after the discredit of the UNSCOM in the past for the spying charges that have been proven. There are never any set that Iraq has to do this, 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 and this, and it's over. It's certified as disarmed. It's always left to the U.S. to decide whenever and if ever it wants to give Iraq a clean bill of health on this topic. So it's absolutely not a question of weapons of mass destruction, and other countries in the region also are armed to the teeth right now. So Iraq is probably the least of the countries that is right now danger to the region in this concern.
I absolutely agree with you. Today I was listening to the Minister of Information of Kuwait, and he was saying clearly that we are against any war against Iraq. We don't encourage this war. He made it in a press conference. And the only thing he was mentioning that we have 600 prisoners in Iraq, and we would like some information about them, if they're still alive, or what's happening to them. Meanwhile, many of the other countries, they are saying we have nothing to do with this threat of war in Iraq, and absolutely Iraq has nothing to do with terrorism. They said it many, many times of Osama bin Laden or Al-Qaeda. They said our system doesn't encourage such allegations, which the U.S. policy is trying to make a contact. They're saying that it must be a state-sponsored terrorism. So who's another state is Iraq. Iraq has nothing to do with that. They said it again and again and again. Meanwhile, it seems that they would like the system to be changed. They would like Mr. Saddam Hussein. You were in Iraq recently, Linda?
I was in Iraq in 1999.
1999?
Yes.
How did you see the situation? Was it at that time, I guess there was no talk of war, but... You probably saw a different situation in 1999.
Right. Actually, they had just experienced Desert Fox. So I went down to Basra and saw some of the devastation there from Desert Fox. And what I had seen, you know, was a country that was sort of almost first world. You know, you go around the hospitals and saw that they were very modern and up-to-date but just didn't have the equipment that they needed. A lot of despondency within the people because they had been under the sanctions for so long, and you know it's been going on since then, and now it's going to be the 12th anniversary on August the 6th.
Mm-hmm. Actually, the war never really stopped against Iraq. There was always some airplanes going, some shooting. It never really stopped, but the sanction continued.
We will
take a brief break, and we will come back to have more discussions on these issues, and we'll talk about the question of sanctions. My guests are Luis Azaria and Mark Azar from Montreal and Linda Morgan from Vancouver. Let us listen to the most contemporary Iraqi artist, Kadim Seher, in his song, Tonight I Have Weird Feelings.
I'm not
Hi, you are listening to Off the Hour from CKUT 90.3 FM. I'm Joseph El-Maleh, and this is a special program on the rising tension between the U.S. and Iraq. My guests are three specialists on the Iraqi issue, Luis Azaria and Mark Azar from Montreal, and on the phone from Vancouver, Linda Morgan. Welcome back to the program.
Thank you.
How much do we know about sanctions in Iraq, and how much it affects the people and the situation on the ground?
Well, as Mark mentioned earlier, there has been over 1.5 million people have died, many children, and there is poverty. As in one letter I received, even in the early part of the sanctions, in the early 90s, they said that in the letter it was said that the middle class now have become the poor class, and the poor class, the people of the poor class, are dying. The destruction of the Gulf War, Iraq has not been able to repair the destruction because of the sanctions. For example, Iraq has not been able to restore its water supply system, has not been able to restore its sewage treatment facilities, has not been able to repair all its electrical generating facilities. Therefore, these basic things explain why people are dying, because if children don't have clean water, if sewage is not being treated, and also because of the not enough electricity, therefore not the facilities, the hospital facilities, they can't be used properly. This is what's causing many people to die from simple things that are treated by very simply. So there is the death by these things, and as well as the poverty. I received a letter from a relative not that long ago. He said he's a man who's receives a pension. He told me that in 2001 his pension was quadrupled, but was quadrupled from 2,000 dinars to 8,000 dinars, which is still about $5 to $6. That's what it comes to, what the dinars are worth today. And he explained to me that the place where he lives, he pays 3,000 dinars. He has a health problem, a heart problem. It takes 2,000 dinars for the medication, and he's left with 3,000 dinars. And he says, with that, I can't even buy 1 kilo of meat. So you can imagine, the only way that this has been surviving is because a brother who lives outside Iraq has been sending him some money. So you can imagine the people who don't have anybody helping them, what kind of situation they're in.
Linda, when you were in 1999 in Iraq and Basra, how did you see the people that were in the middle of the sanction or going through the sanction?
Well, I saw, I was only there for 8 days. And, I visited the hospitals and schools, and I saw the need, and I saw many examples of what your other guest was speaking about. But also here in Vancouver, we've had Dennis Halliday and Hans von Sponeck come and speak. And both of those former UN coordinators are calling this a genocide that's going on, and it's the most documented genocide in history. And Dennis Halliday was just speaking at the CFAT hearings on June the 4th, and there he said that the most monster killer in Iraq right now is the waterborne diseases, because the civilian infrastructure was targeted during the Gulf War, and because of the UN Security Council decisions, they haven't been allowed to repair, and Canada supports those decisions because they have been prohibiting such capital investment as repairing the infrastructure. So what is going on in Iraq now is terrible. It is a genocide, and Canada is supporting that.
Mark, we'd like to know more about the Canadian position on sanction on Iraq.
Canada has been, from the beginning, supporting, as Linda mentioned, The sanctions, and especially the what's been killing so many people, that's included in the sanctions, is that clause of double usage, which means that anything that is of civilian use but also can be used for military purposes is embargoed from Iraq, so they cannot import it. And that is a real cause for all of the problems Linda and Louis mentioned. Canada has been from the start in 1991. It did not take part, I believe, in the bombings, but it did help in fueling American airplanes. It did participate. It did send frigates. Since the end of the Gulf War, Canada has been sending frigates to the Gulf each 3 or 4 months on rotation, at the cost of $35 or $36 million each time. So that's around $115 million each year to impose the embargo on Iraq in the Gulf, so that no cargo ship from other countries can trade with Iraq outside of what is deemed possible by the sanction, which is almost which is the problem actually. Canada has been at the we've when we came we sent Voices of Conscience delegation to Canada to Iraq, sorry, in 2000 in winter January. It came back with and it also participated in the committee affairs meeting in Ottawa in regards to foreign affairs policy. There was a meeting there, and there was a conclusion from a report that was issued from that meeting. Linda and others were also part. Also gave testimonies, and Canada's position at that meeting, that standing committee, was that Canada should remove the sanctions, its support for the sanctions on Iraq. This was a report that unfortunately fell on deaf ears when it came to foreign affairs. At the time it was Lloyd Axworthy who was minister. It was never put into effect. Canada never, even though that report was supported by MPs from the Liberal Party. It was a multi-party. All parties supported this, NDP, Liberals and Conservative Party. So this report never made it in Ottawa. It was lost on the shelves somewhere. Since then, Canada has been participating. So in these, it recently sent $1 million, believe, as humanitarian help to Iraq, which was refused because Iraq knows of Canada's participation in the frigates and the embargo in the Gulf. The cost of, as I mentioned, $30 million each time. So it was refused. Canada sent it to the Red Cross, saying that it was proved that it was trying to help the Iraqis. But since the end of the Gulf War, Canada has been following basically the U.S. Policies. And even when Canada in 2000 was at the U.N. Security Council as a rotating member for 2 years, it absolutely never opposed or never suggested anything else than U.S. Policies did at that place at that time. So it's been following the U.S.
Policies. And
right now, with the war and menace on Iraq, the bombings, it says that Jean Chrétien has been on record and others have been on record in Canada saying that they want the U.N. to give any decision on Iraq concerning military action has to go through UN before there is any accord by Canada given to such action. But in the past, as in the Gulf War at the time in 1991, the same position was taken on Afghanistan. It was the same position also reiterated by Canada, that they wanted the UN to take a position before taking sides, and this did not come true. And Canada always says in the end, well, they're our allies, so we'll stick with our allies, even if we disagree with them. So I'm not too enthused by Canada's position right now of saying that the UN must decide. It's been a very, very timid response so far.
Yes, Luis. How much of this sanction against the Iraqi people and how much of it against Saddam Hussein and the regime?
Well, I think the sanctions are only affecting the people. When I was in Iraq in the early 90s, immediately after the war, the people were saying, they were writing, and that they were saying this. The sanctions are called al-hisar, which means the siege. The siege on Iraq is imposed by the U.S. That's what they were saying. And Saddam Hussein, he's becoming stronger. He is the one that they hope will save them from the situation. But certainly, the government of Saddam Hussein is not being blamed for the siege on Iraq that's causing so much hardship.
You know, it seems to me that always they go after one person and the people have to suffer. We have this for Mullah Omar of Afghanistan, where the Afghanis at the end they suffered, and the Mullah is still wandering around, they're still alive, and as we all know. And the same thing with Saddam Hussein. And I'm sure he's benefiting from this. It shows from the pictures we see of him, and the system is still benefiting from this siege. It brings more weapon and brings more commissions, unfortunately, to the arms industry. And the people are suffering. The same thing goes with Yasser Arafat also, where we want Yasser Arafat. Isn't there another way to perhaps encourage democracy and perhaps giving aid to foster democracy and freedom of speech and let the people do the work instead of taking the whole nation or nations into siege and sanction? What do you think, Mark?
Well, that's been the exact position of groups that are anti-sanctions, is that of course, with the siege and with the imposition of sanctions and the barricade against Iraq, the people have recentered around their leader and their. So right now, the most basic need is to survive day by day, not knowing what tomorrow will bring. People don't have the mind right now to speak about things like democracy or participation elections or stuff like that. They're more, all their energies have to be concentrated on surviving from day to day. The way to indeed bring democracy to a country like Iraq is indeed, first of all, to let the Iraqis choose their leader, but also give them the means to do so by not almost making them... I'm trying not to use the word zombie, but people that do not have any other means of having other activities than trying to survive day by day. They don't have right now the energies or the leisure to take things like freedom or decide or think about these things like democracy. And it's certainly not something that can be imposed from, which is a complete contradiction, imposed from the outside with another new dictator or another new military strongman. That is absolutely not the solution to this problem. And we're seeing it in Egypt also right now. Nobody speaks about Egypt with the thing about Saad Eddin Ibrahim's arrest and 7 years sentence to hard labor. There is no cry in the West, no cry in the U.S. about this. There have been one recent article about this from a very courageous fellow from Jordan, actually, who's probably right now checking his back. But there is nothing right now for democracy in the Arab world. Nobody cares about this. This is not the issue right now, absolutely not. But of course, the bombing the country will not increase the likelihood of this happening.
Well, it seems I would like to disagree with you on this democracy movement in the Arab world. There is a growing movement of democracy. Democracy, they don't support armed struggles, they don't support wars, they ask for freedom of speech, and there is a movement within the Iraqis. There is a big section who believe in the democracy. Within the Palestinians, sure enough, there is a big group. Maybe they are not vocal as Al-Fatah or Hamas, But they are there, and
I'm not
and
the same thing in Jordan too. I'm not disputing the fact. I'm saying that there's no encouragement from the West right now.
If you look at Egypt right now,
Canada has not mentioned anything about what's going on in Egypt, and this is very important from democracy. What's happening with Saad Eddine Ibrahim, which is a clear case if they were serious about promoting democracy, they would jump on this issue right now.
Yeah, unfortunately, his case has kind of been put aside and not so much talk about it. And although let's go back to the Iraqi position, how to get out of this situation, how to stop this crazy thinking of war and perhaps inject some ideas into the Iraqi system to say that it is time to change, or in the Middle East in general, Dr. Azariah.
Yeah, well, I think that a country like Canada, which can play a role of bringing the two sides together, should do that, and should do that, should speak out, shouldn't just wait to see what the U.S. mood is going to be. I think a country like Canada can take a position bringing the two sides together. I think it's not just a question of disarming this or that country. They have to have regional disarmament. Mark mentioned before, all the countries in that area have arms. And then also the other thing is that the big powers, they benefit there in the business of making arms, of fabricating arms, of in the arms business. And they have to this business of arms for oil, that has to stop. The oil should be used for improving civilian infrastructure, for education, for health, and so on. And I think a lot of it was used before for that, in Iraq. You know, this is the reason why Iraq before the Gulf War had such a high standard in education and health and so on. So I think we have to get away from that. And Canada can play a role. I think our prime minister, he can play an important role by standing up and saying, no, we don't want any more war. Look what the war has done. What has war in Iraq or Afghanistan or Yugoslavia, what has it achieved? You know, we have to get away from this war mentality. We have to get into a way of solving problems by talking, by negotiations, going through the UN, even though it's imperfect, the UN, you know, because of the the economic dictatorship of the that's imposed on the UN by the big powers. I mean, we have to get away from that. And small countries like Canada can play a role. And I think we're not doing that. This is why it's important that we tell our prime minister we don't want Canada to participate in war, and we, you know, have to go out. We're going to have a silent vigil on the 6th of August in Montreal about the sanctions. There is an exposition of Iraqi photographs and works of art that's going to take place in Montreal. We should
Could you give us the address? Where is it going to be exactly?
Yeah. Yes, I think
it's at for the exposition that's supposed to be from 7th August to the 30th. It's from you can go in at noon, from noon to 5 p.m. It's at 372 Saint Catherine West. It's the Belgo Edifice. It's at the fourth floor, Espace 418. And it's supposed to go, as I said, from the 7th of August until the 31st. The march that Louis mentioned is done in conjunction with two other organizations. One is the I forgot the name, but one is the Muslim Association. The other is PAJU, who is well known in the Palestinian circle. So this is has been going on in Montreal for the last 3 years. It's supposed to go on at Parc Normand Béthune, near Concordia University, on the corner of the Maisonneuve and Guy. On the 6th of August, we're asking people to be there at 7:30 p.m., of course. It's a march, a silent march, to commemorate both the bombings of Hiroshima and Nagasaki, and also the start of the embargo on Iraq.
Linda, a last word from you?
Yeah, well, I think Canada could play a role in doing this. And Scott Ritter, when he was at CFATE hearings on June the 4th, he actually challenged the Canadian government. He said that we have a historical opportunity to step up to the fold and exercise leadership. You know, Canada has done that in the landmines issue, so they could do that. And one of the first steps that they could do is actually to reopen our embassy in Baghdad, which is what the fifth report of the CFATE hearings that were held in 2000 actually recommended. And I'd also like to add that we too are part of the Canada-wide day of action that's happening across all of Canada and many cities across Canada, speaking out about the sanctions on Iraq on August the 6th. And we're going to be having a die-in.
In Vancouver?
Yes.
Well, great job. I want to thank you very much, Linda. And we come to the end of our program for today.
Thank you for having me on.
Thank you so much, and thanks for our listeners. That was a special edition of Off the Hour program. My thanks to our guests, Luis Azaria, Mark Azar from Montreal, and on the phone from Vancouver, Linda Morgan. My special thanks goes also to Julie Manjo, the media coordinator, to the Voices of Conscience, and sincere thanks to Gretchen King on the main control room and producer of Off the Hour. Before I pass the mic to her, let me play another song of Kadem Saher, Ya Zaman, What a Time.
تمحي آلام السنين وأي فرح هذا اللي يسكت دمع بعين.